Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the expansion of who we are as human beings. And tonight we're going to talk about, well, one of my favorite subjects. I don't know if it's favorite, but it's one that I'm familiar with. We're going to be talking about a film about abduction called Extraordinary: The Seeding, with the producer Jack Roth and the producer-director John Sumple. And thank you guys for being here.
Thank you.
I mean, the film, it's a good overview of what happens during the abduction scenario, the alien abduction scenario. Well, first of all, is this possible? Did you present this film as a kind of introduction to people who didn't know anything about it, or for people who already had experiences and want a confirmation?
Well, primarily our objective when we started, you know, way back with the Stan Romanek story in 2013 was to tell stories in a way that makes it accessible to the largest audience possible. So instead of targeting a film that would resonate just with people who are believers of the genre or have had experiences, our goal was to move the conversation to the middle of the bell curve, not just the fringes. So we wanted to make sure that we told stories in a way that would be digestible, acceptable, intriguing, interesting, entertaining, educating to a wide array of people. So our primary driver of anything that we're going to be making, you know, in the past, present, and future is with that in mind, to reach the widest audience possible so that we can help, you know, open minds, get people to think about alternative concepts in a different light.
I mean, my take, because I've been involved with this, I think maybe I've been abducted, because I resonate a lot with what the people said in the film. And the thing is, if I hadn't had my experiences, I don't know if I would believe. I think they believe it, but how do you get people to say this is possible if they haven't had the experience? Because it's so hard to relate to. Even, I mean, I watch it and I say, yes, I have that, but then I don't know how to tell others, even if I tell them my story, that this is true.
Well, I would say that, you know, for us, I think as filmmakers, we wanted to go into this as you want to tell a compelling story. And I don't think you're really not trying to convince anyone of anything, but I think it's the fact that it's a human story, it's an emotional story. Mm-hmm. And when you're watching it, for someone I know of, I've never been abducted. But just watching the film when it was over, when it was finished, it was an emotional pull for me. I felt it. I felt some of the abductees, some of the experiencers. I felt their pain as a human being. So I think for us, the main goal was to, again, be objective filmmakers, present the stories as they are, and. I think because it's part of the human condition. So even if it's never happened to you, there is a great line, one of the best lines. John and I, we talk about this all the time. One of the women in the documentary said, you know, if it doesn't happen to you, it's just a story.
Right.
And I think
exactly.
It applies to everything that happens. I know the same thing. People, you know, if you've never seen a ghost, I have to see it to believe it. So, and that applies to just about everything. The thing that does apply to everyone is that we're all human. And that this is part of the human condition. If someone is suffering and you see that they're struggling with something, that resonates. And I think that's the important thing.
Right. I mean, you didn't get into it so too much, but I think trauma is a big part of the experience. And this is why I think people are so disconnected from their own experiences, because like Yvonne Smith says, 1 out of 50 people is likely from the Roper poll. What do you say about the trauma these people are experiencing? And do you feel like there's more to their experiences that they haven't accessed?
That's a conversation. And I think it really depends on the individuals, because some people who have seen the film have been triggered to the point where they're starting to remember that something happened to them that they never really consciously, you know, considered before. So that's just kind of like, you know, just literally peeling the first layer of the onion, versus people who are in touch with what's happened to them. And there's a variety of different ways that that they respond. Some people are traumatized emotionally and physically as a result of what's happened to them. Other people manage it in a way is like, well, how can I turn this into something that helps other people? Mm-hmm. So we have a little bit of that in the film where Geraldine Orozco has had some pretty profound things happen to her, but she has turned around to say, I'm going to help other people. I mean, she quit a six-figure-a-year job. She left a fiance and said, this is where I need to focus my attention. So when you hear somebody who's gone through something so profound that it alters their life, they walk away from success in business, they walk away from a relationship because they know they're driven to do something much more important, which is to help people who are struggling or help people who have been through something that they can't quite have a contextual understanding of what happened to them. Mm-hmm. And then you have other people like Rob and April. April is more coming into her wonder about all of this. And even though she's had some pretty horrific things that have happened to her, she hasn't been able to process it all completely. And Rob, on the other hand, is still trying to figure out what it all means and why what happened to him when it did and what he's supposed to do with it. Yeah. So there's, I mean, you could talk to 100 different people and each one of them are going to have a different story about how they were processing it. But that was a big part of what we wanted to accomplish with this film, is to show people who've never had an experience that the people who have are no different than you. They could be your next door neighbor. They could be a family member. They could be a best friend, but they've had something so profound that they can't quite understand how to deal with themselves. And really all they need is support from people around them, as opposed to being ostracized. And we have a tendency as society as a whole is to look at this phenomena and kind of turn a deaf ear. We just don't want to hear about it. We don't want to deal with it. We think there's something wrong with people who have been through a process like this. And one of our objectives with this film was to raise awareness to that whole concept of turning away as opposed to turning toward people who have been through a process like this.
Why this is so inconceivable for the mainstream culture. And I think, of course, there's no context to put this sort mm-hmm. of a experience in. And then we can look at the big picture of what's really going on within the consciousness of the human being. What other experiences are we excluding?
From a metaphysical perspective, we spend a lot of time amongst ourselves talking about what's the best way to communicate this, because neither Jack nor I or anybody else on our crew has ever been abducted. We're not sure. Yeah, but I guess we have no consciousness of it. Maybe we have, but we have no consciousness of it. So we have to take, you know, the story telling approach of let's listen. Let's not just, you know, gloss over or hear briefly, but let's take a deeper dive, listen some more, listen a little bit harder, and then try to present those stories in a way where people can connect to them. So one of the things in this film is the whole concept of pregnancy and miscarriage, which I think every woman on the planet can relate to, that whole idea of whether they've lost a child or not, but the whole idea of losing something near and dear to them is very traumatic. So whether you have had an abduction experience that ended with a fetus missing after 3 months or not, you can still relate to the emotional pain of that. So we think that people will connect to this, like Jack said earlier, from the humanity element, that we're all humans. We all feel certain emotions when certain things happen to us. What we're just trying to do is connect people to the emotion of the pain and anguish and trauma that is connected to something like this, so that people don't see it as something to run from. It's something that we could be there for people and help them out. We're not trying to get all, you know, super emotional with this, but there is a big part of it that was transformational for us when we were making the film, and we started to see this emotion coming through. It was very visceral for us. Well, hearing that, for me, you know, as I was doing the interviews and sitting across from somebody who is telling you their pain and they're getting emotional, it became apparent to me that this was not about telling stories. This was about helping people who've been through something that I can't understand. As storytellers, we kind of, you know, went back after the filming was done and said, we have a different story than what we thought we were going to get. We thought we were going to be reporting on this phenomena of unexplained pregnancies. But what what really came out was the trauma, the anguish, the pain, the suffering, the emotional disconnect from what is the perceived reality that we all have. And when you have somebody who says, I've seen something different, I've experienced something different than what you have. And you, as much as you're listening to me, it's hard for you to relate to what I'm sharing with you because you haven't been through it yourself. So that's huge. That's something that, you know, when we think about it, is from a metaphysical point of view, is it interdimensional? Are we cosmic brothers? Is our DNA the same? And when you start asking big questions like that, it takes the conversation just from, you know, lights in the sky with intelligent life looking at us and saying hello, to how do we fit into the big picture?
Well, yeah, you know, we have to ask those questions, because if it's just creatures from another planet borrowing our DNA, it can't be the total picture. How do they slip in and out of our rooms, our bedrooms, cars, freezing people in time? There is an interdimensional quality that we have to bring into the story. How do we start to weave those bigger, the story of who we are as humans?
I think people, most people, when they're starting to open up to something, or they're starting to do research or learn about something, it's kind of stages. And I think we've been through stages. I think you always start with, oh my gosh, there's a craft in the sky.
Right.
And then so then you wrap your head around that, right? So you're able to wrap your head around that. Okay, there's a craft in the sky. It's operated by some kind of intelligence. Okay, good, fine. Then it's, well, is it ETs? And then, you know, I think that's fairly easy for people, especially today at this point. I think most people, because of science and astronomy and the things we've learned, that everyone pretty much is like, yeah, there's life on other planets. I mean, we know that now. We know that there's probably a lot more life on other planets than we initially thought there were. So now I think most people are like, of course, yeah, for the most part, absolutely, there's extraterrestrial life. Then it starts to get a little deeper. So then you're like, okay, well, wait a minute. So people are saying now they're getting abducted. So now it's a little more personal. It's not just in the sky. It's far away. I see something. It's really cool. And it makes me wonder about the universe. Now it gets a little bit more, quite frankly, scary, because it's like, wait a minute, people are being abducted against their will. And there's all these stories and all these people coming out and saying, you know, look, this happened to me. This happened to us. This happened to, you know, whoever it might be. So then it becomes, you have to start processing that. Is that possible? Is that something that could happen? And you start thinking about the technology of it, and how can they do this? How can they travel from one point to another point in the galaxy or the solar system or whatever? Then it gets really complicated when you start thinking interdimensionally. Well, the only way they can travel would be interdimensionally, or that they're bending space-time and through some kind of an orbit, you know, through some kind of a wormhole. And then you have to kind of expand your ability to accept certain things that we might not accept, our sciences might not have accepted yet. And what's this all for? That gets very deep. And it scares a lot of people. And most people that we've spoken to are a little, you know, there are the people who think, well, you know, it's all good. It's all for the benefit of humanity. And in the end, it's all love and light. And we're going to be good. We're going to ascend, and we're going to be in our next step of human evolution. All good. But for the most part, I think people who really do a lot of research on this, they realize there's some issues here that we need to deal with. And from a moral standpoint, from the morality of being taken against your will and manipulating DNA. So there's a lot. There's so many layers to this. And I think for us, we've been on this journey, and we've all been on this journey, right? But we started at a certain point. We started with certain experiences, and our experiences define our paradigm. Based on our experiences and our journey, we have certain theories about what this could be. Now, I guess that's kind of the long answer to the question.
No, but, you know, that gets us to the point, what could this be? But also, I'd love for you to also bring in, and let's jump a few levels, and from what you've just said, to this idea of paranormal or other realities. And you said in your work with Stan Romanoff, there were things that happened to you. So could you talk about some of your experiences and where you think that fits into the ET phenomena?
Let me start off with it, and then Jack, you can kind of take it from there. But I think, you know, emphasizing a little bit on that sequence that Jack talked about, is that too many people and this is not a slam, but the reality is that we are in an earthbound paradigm that has been kind of force-fed to us to the point where all we understand is that the world is the center of everything, and our experience is we're the best thing that's out there. Anything greater than us, whether it's from a religious perspective or a nationalistic perspective, you know, you have people who think that, you know, the walls within their country, you know, make them the best in the world, or the belief in their religious paradigm makes them, you know, the chosen one. So there's this crafting of our reality. And until we can step outside of that and really look at something from a more cosmic, something from a more metaphysical perspective, we're not going to have those conversations. And again, that's one of the reasons why we want to drip water on the stone with stories like this, is to get, you know, kind of activate people into having those discussions. But, you know, to take it to that next level of conversation, people have to be comfortable with understanding that what they currently believe might not be true.
Let's have that, a little bit of that conversation, because I think we're at this level and, you know, there are a lot of people wanting to know the deeper story, because the material world paradigm doesn't answer really much of anything. There is this other level that everyone suspects. So in your experience with ETs and your own personal investigations, what do you realize about the nature of reality as an ET, as a cosmic phenomenon? I know that's a big question and there's lots of ways to take that, but I'm just curious about your own, in a way, worldviews.
Jack, you did a lot of work in the paranormal space and have seen the connection.
Well, we both have. And, you know, we actually started in that area of research. And, you know, I think the one thing that there's crossover. But I think the thing you realize right away is, okay, so it really goes back to what John said. We live in a 3D paradigm. And what 10 years ago, if you would have said to me, ETs are interdimensional, I would have said, that's hogwash. That's ridiculous. Come on. Now I kind of think that's the truth. It's because of the, you can't explain. You're right. There's things we just simply cannot explain. And no one knows the answers to these things. Nobody does.
Well,
they've had their own.
What can't you explain? Can you talk about, I mean, not saying you have to explain it, but give me an example of what you can't explain.
Okay. I think a good example for that, and there are others, but I think one of the good examples is that in many of these abduction scenarios, you have people that say that they are sleeping, they're awoken, that once the memories come back, they remember that they're all of a sudden they're awake, they can't move their bodies, and they're being controlled by these ETs, whether they're grays, the small grays that are the most common that you hear about, and that literally they'll start floating out of the room and through a wall, through their bedroom wall, and the next thing they know, they're in a craft, they're in a spacecraft, they're being controlled, there's nothing they can do about it. They can't fight them, they're basically frozen. What can't we explain there? Well, I don't know how to explain going through a wall. I mean, I can understand if someone's abducted, if they sneak in through the back door, and maybe they drag them out, but how do they get them to, if the ship has it landed on the back lawn, but how do you explain all of this technology? How do you explain their ability to phase in and out so that their molecules, don't get stuck in the wall? How could they get through a wall, a solid wall? So that goes into, you know, very complex quantum physics, but that would be an example of, we can't explain that. So what does that suggest? Well, we have higher density in the 3D world we live in is very high density, right? Mm. It's very thick.
It's still full of a lot of empty space, but yes.
Right. But then think of, okay, so if you go to, you know, fourth dimensional, sixth dimension, eighth dimensional, now all of a sudden it's higher vibrational. It's a higher energy. It's a higher frequency. And now that might explain, well, that's how they can get through walls, and that's how they can come in and abduct someone and no one sees it. And the technology, you know, things such as the fact that they can control us with their minds telepathically, well, that's something that could be because they're you know, hundreds of thousands of years more evolved than we are. And they basically, that's how they communicate, is telepathically. Mm-hmm. And they're able to control us because we're just, our brains aren't as evolved as theirs are. So there's so many things like that when you go through these abduction cases, sure, that it's like, well, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. How does that?
Yeah. You know? Another big one is the missing time.
Right.
How many times have we talked to people, and how many times have been documented over the last 50, 60 years where people are talking about, you know, all of a sudden I look back at the clock and it was 2.5 hours later. How do we explain that moment where, you know, we interviewed another person who was walking through the woods and said, hey, I want to go and look at this over here, goes and looks over there, then turns around and walks back to the car where his friend was waiting for him. And the guy, you know, he looks down at the ground. He says there's like 4 or 5 cigarettes that have already been stomped out. And he's like, where the hell have you been?
Right.
He's like, what do you mean, where the hell have I been? I just walked off the path for 5 seconds and turned around and came over. He goes, you've been gone for 2 hours.
Yeah, we can't explain it in the paradigm that we've grown up in, and that's been propagated for our awareness now. Because I was regressed, and I felt like there was a sort of mold they made of where I was in time and space. And when I was brought back from wherever they took me, these beings, I was put back into that mold, like the film was spliced into the flow of time for my consciousness, even though obviously something happened between them for my awareness. So I'm saying we can't explain it, but I think our job as thinkers and philosophers or whatever and filmmakers is to start to put together pieces of a greater paradigm that we're a part of as human beings. That's the job of evolution, to start to put together a bigger puzzle of what's really going on. And I think the ETs are leading us into these greater ways of knowing the world.
But there's part of that too that makes you sit there and think, though, that, you know, really, how evolved are we? You know, are we being protected in that bubble? Are we being protected by that, like, kind of little shell, or that the story that's been told, or the screen memories that are projected? What if our entire existence is a screen memory?
Well,
what if, you know, we're in the Matrix and we're not aware? I mean, those are the type of things when you start to ask those questions, you start having conversations that can lead you to alternate possibilities, that can lead you to alternate physics, which is happening, but nobody talks about it.
But we need to talk about it. Let's talk about it, because that's what needs to happen, I think. Well, we're talking about it now, but
sure,
no one's talking about it, yes, in the scientific world, but I think whether films like yours and others and books.
And again, I think, you know, one of the messages that, you know, some people might sit there and say, well, you're trying to bring it to the masses so that it has, you know, you make more money. And it's really not about that for us. For us, it's been, you know, our mission from the very beginning, when Jack and I had these very first conversations back in 2009, was seeking the truth. This is about a search for the truth. So what is the truth? Is the truth something that is known, or is the truth something to be explored?
Well, I think it's something to be explored, because if it was something that would be known, we'd have the answers, and obviously we don't have the answers.
You know, kind of where we're coming from is that we don't know if we believe the truth that has been projected or you know, delivered to us by the, you know, previous generations or previous dogma or whatever that might be. And, you know, when you have people, you know, so we sit there and we look at Newtonian physics or Einstein physics, and we can sit there and say that there's evolution in physics. So why would we think now that there isn't? Why would we think that we've capped it off? We're where we should be because of what Einstein, you know, delivered to us, you know, 100 years ago or 70 years ago,
it's
whatever
what
that might be.
Meteorite thinking. There aren't rocks that fall from the sky, or the people that wanted to close the patent office in the 1890s because they thought everything had been invented.
Everything was there.
Right.
It had all been discovered. So, I mean, one of the things that you think about, too, is that I'm excited about the younger generations, because – you know, we've grown up through this, you know, we grew up through, you know, the post-war and everything that came with that, the post-space program and everything that came with that, the you know, that kind of led us into the technology world and then the information world, and things are getting faster, faster, faster. At some point we step back and go, let's talk about some of the questions, the age-old questions. Why are we here? Because, you know, you get to the point where you can only, you know, you can only get things so much so fast or do things so quickly or have experiences. And when I was a mom, hadn't been on a plane until she was in her mid-30s. My grandmother was 72 the first time she got on a plane. Now kids are flying all over the world when they're newborns. So the world is getting smaller. And our minds should be getting bigger as a result of the access to the world and the information that is available at our fingertips with a couple clicks of the keys. So really what we're trying to do with films like this is to stimulate discussion, you know, poke people and get them to be a little bit more curious and to wonder about things that they may not have challenged in their minds before. One of the greatest, you know, a great story that I should talk about after our first film came out was after the screening at a festival in Fort Lauderdale. I spoke to a good friend a couple of days later, and she told me, she says, I needed to process this a little bit because I wanted to have a thoughtful, insightful conversation with you. And she said, and really what it came down for me is that I have never contemplated this possibility before, the existence of beings that were here abducting people. She said, she was in her 40s at the time and said, I've never really given this much thought. And this has forced me to think about something that I've never thought of before. And if we can do that to tens of hundreds, maybe tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people, you know, we're contributing to that evolution of mind expansion and thought and the possibilities that, you know, what we know might not be all there is, and that there could be a different truth that's out there.
Well, another level of the conversation, because I have this conversation with a lot of people who have had experiences, who suspect experiences, that somehow consciousness itself, but it's not local to the planet Earth. Who we are, in a way, cosmic, is RET. They're not, it's beyond the human realm. And when we meet the other, even though they may be more intellectually, intelligently evolved and technologically, there's a union of mind that expands the possibility, even those people have been traumatized, as an expansion of consciousness within the realms of who they know themselves to be. So that's a kind of conversation people are having now because of the result of, you know, 50 years of abduction discussions.
Well, you know, we talk, it's universal consciousness, right?
Yeah.
That's what we talk about. And, you know, Edgar Cayce talked about the Akashic records, that it's everything in the entire universe that's ever happened is available to us, that we, all that information is shared by all of us because we're all connected. You know, it gets metaphysical. I think the issue is, so you have the physical that we're so used to. You know, John, it's so funny when you told me that story about one of our friends that we both know, that when she said that, I had never really thought about that before. I was thinking the same. I couldn't believe it. I said, here's a 40-something year old woman who's never contemplated the idea that there could be ETs that could be somehow making contact with us and, you know, possibly abducting humans. And that blew my mind. But I think that's, we're so indoctrinated, and I think we're kept so busy in our daily lives that we've lost a little bit of our metaphysical awareness, our universal awareness, our cosmic, the fact that we're all connected. And I think we've all lost that. I think that's one of the reasons why today there's so many people who have depression and anxiety, and they feel so alone. They feel disconnected. Well, why do people feel so disconnected? You know, and we have to look at that. We have to go back to that. And that's what John was saying. It's like we have all the technology in the world, and, you know, it keeps coming, and it keeps getting better, and it keeps getting, you know, easier to do everything. But then we're losing touch with who we are as human beings.
Well, the other thing is, if for that woman that you know, most people think, if this is true, how come everyone doesn't know it? How come it's not in all the media?
Right.
And then we realize how manipulated we are by the media to think about things in a certain way. And of course, the Navy had all that whole ridicule program for anyone coming out suspecting there were UFOs as a reality. And it's also why you get 5,000 people at something called Contact in the Desert. I think you guys were there, right? So
yes, we were there.
And you can feel there's a camaraderie in the audience. At least I do, because I'm one of the MCs there. And I feel like, wow, this is a new consciousness coming together where this doesn't have to be whispered about. It's openly accepted. And we can think about a more universal reality. That was my impression of those gatherings.
Well, I think what we're good, where we're moving toward, as much as people don't think about the bigger picture as much as they could and should, I think what's starting to happen, though, is more and more people are sharing their stories, whether it's to friends or, you know, even coming out in a public forum, whether they're a celebrity or a business person or, you know, just somebody talking to a next door neighbor or a best friend and sharing their experience. We want to encourage more of that. So if that becomes part of the public discourse, then we're moving in the right direction, because it gets easier and easier to accept the layers that Jack talked about before. You know, when we move from, they're here, they're among us, there's hybridization programs, they're walking in the streets, you know, with us, to the discussion, you know, that's all accepted. And then we're having the deep discussions in public forums in the media about why. You know, where do we go from here? And we talked about this the other day too, is like, when disclosure happens, everything changes. And people don't, you know, really think too much about if disclosure happens in the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, whenever that might be, everything changes. And I think a lot of people's, their mindset, because we've been talking about the bubble that we kind of live in, their immediate thought process is, well, we'll adapt. Well, what are you going to adapt to? The presence of somebody else that you never expected to be there, or the idea that you're part of a metaphysical, cosmic existence, which is very difficult. Social structures get destroyed. Political structures get destroyed. Religious structures get destroyed. And then you're looking at things in a way that you've never thought of before. But, you know, maybe if we start thinking about those now, we get to a much better place much quicker.
Right. That's a big discussion. Will disclosure affect culture? And I think disclosure is an inside job. I think it's we've already had disclosure. I mean, the New York Times, December 16th, 2017. And people just don't know what to do. I think there's a quote like that from Emerson in your film. They don't know what to do with a new idea. There's no foundation to integrate them. That sort of thinking, so it's ignored or just okay.
Yeah, and we've had this discussion too with some people who've kind of pushed back on us and you know, the whole idea, well, the Earth is flat, or the Earth is the center of the solar system, or no solar system, but the center of the our galaxy. Right. So there's been all of these huge leaps. Don't necessarily happen overnight, but they take some time. But for what we're trying to get people to understand by stimulating these conversations and pushing them is that, you know, things that we believe today, 100 years ago, we'll laugh at. Or 100 years from now, we'll laugh at.
Of course.
We'll be like, could you believe that we believe that? Well, because we've advanced ourselves.
No
so
one
if
would.
We could just start thinking that way.
Well, no one would think 100 years ago you could talk to anyone anywhere in the world by a little device in your pocket. So, yeah, but I think hopefully we're progressive in our culture. I am curious if you want to share some of those personal paranormal phenomenal experiences, because what I think is paranormal is a level of reality that we've also blocked off, like the abduction experience, that we just have yet to integrate, but it's probably more normal than paranormal.
Sure. Well, John, I think there's a couple things here. First of all, I think one thing that might be interesting to talk about would be what, once we got involved in the Romanek case, what happened to us as far as the phone calls and the high strangeness associated with that. I think that would be a good place to start. And then obviously there were other things that happened as well, but I think that was the really big thing that
was
could not explain.
Because high strangeness, I just want to say, high strangeness is like a key phrase for anyone dealing with this phenomena that that the nuts and bolts people want to ignore, just like, oh, it's just abduction, aliens from other planets. But yes, please share that. Sorry.
Well, the one thing, and it's kind of a long story, but I'll give you the Reader's Digest version by starting with the end. I had a relative that used to work in the telephone industry, and I shared the story with him without telling him the context and what the connection was. And he basically said, by the time I was done sharing the story, he says, well, the only people that have access to what happened to you guys would be the government. The government could do that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, then I shared with him, you know, what happened. And he's like, well, I'm not going to say that it was aliens, but, you know, that's a tough one to explain. So what wound up happening is that we had four people connected through a phone call. One was on, I was on a cell phone. Another person was on a landline. Another person was on a cable phone, cable modem phone, and one other, and another person. So four people was on a cell phone. We all got connected. Our phones just started ringing. And when my phone rang and I looked at it, it had my cell phone number as the caller ID. And I picked up my cell phone and looked at it, and it said that I was calling myself.
Wow.
And that happened to the other person with the cell phone. And when we all picked up, it was kind of like, hello, you know, who's this? And they're like, oh, you called me. I'm like, no, I didn't call you. And then during the course of us being connected, we had this voice come on and talk to us. The first time it happened, the voice came on, I think it was three different times. And the three or four times basically was, can you hear me? Was the first thing. And then we were all like, oh my, the hair on the back of my neck stood up. Mm-hmm. And then there was a message about, you know, this is an important project. Please continue to move forward. Know that there will be people that will be trying to interfere with you, but everything will, you know, basically go the way it's supposed to go. Mm-hmm. And then the final message was, please let Jack know we're sorry he couldn't be on this call. Wow. Jack was unavailable, you know, that day. So it was something real time. It was something that was happening in the moment. You know, people have said that, well, you know, somebody could have been doing that, you know, with a program. But when I talked to people who knew the technical side, they were like, yeah, there's technology that exists out there, but the person that would be driving that would have to have been on the phone and would not have been able to participate in the ongoing conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, it wouldn't have been, they couldn't have pre-recorded a bunch of messages and then say, oh, okay, here's what, you know, it would have been a challenge to do that. Mm-hmm. And that happened to Jack and I on, I think, three different occasions where we were connected or we got phone calls. I had one time just to me. Mm-hmm. And when it got to the point wherever I saw myself calling myself, I knew what was going to happen. I guess there's two ways to look at it, right? Is that one, Jack, I'll let you jump in a sec. One is that it's a government or a white knight or somebody interjecting into it, or it is intelligence beyond our ability to comprehend.
It's either one of two things. It's either government, you know, some kind of a very high level technology that they're using to do all this, or the thing that made even more sense to me, certainly with some of the calls, was the ET theory. And the reason I say that is the little things that would happen during the calls. First of all, they always started with the, can you hear us? Mm. Can you hear us? It was always us. Right. And then they would say things like, we're sorry. They're very polite. And what they did was they used a electronic, it was like a British woman's voice. So we were actually hearing a woman's voice and it with a British accent. And we actually would call it Audrey because Audrey is one of the software that people use to manipulate voice manipulation. So it's called Audrey. Then they would say, we're sorry that we disconnected, because we'd always get disconnected a couple times. It was very difficult for them to do what they were doing. To connect everyone and keep them connected was difficult. So when we did finally get connected solidly, they would say, we're sorry that we disconnected, but it is very difficult to communicate from such long distances. And they would always say this. Say such long distances. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, on the dark side of Jupiter, I mean, where, what are we talking about here? You know, like it makes you think. And some of, and then it's the things they were saying. The real think about the fact that it could very well be ETs, at least with some of these calls, is the phone calls that Stan got from these little children. Mm. And those are in the film. and because they were recorded. There was a little girl, literally a little girl saying, you know, hi, daddy, it's Kioma. You know, again, sorry, we got disconnected. And, you know, I just want you to know that. And then all of a sudden you hear other little children in the background. And then you hear her shushing the other children. Quiet, I'm trying to talk.
Is this his ET child that has called him?
It's what we speculate is that it was hybrid children.
Right, his hybrid
from his abduction scenario, right. From his abductions, these were his hybrid children that 7-8 years later were actually calling him on the phone saying, hi, daddy, I'm your daughter. Mm. Yeah. And it is absolutely the most compelling. You listen to it and you listen again and you listen again. You can listen to it 100 times and you can't help but think your intuition kicks in and your intuition tells you this is the real deal. Right. This is unbelievable. when we got our phone calls, we would get on the phone afterwards like, John, were we just communicated with by aliens? I mean, what just happened here? Well, you know, like it's mind blowing.
Well, whether it was government or alien, something is telling you you're on the right track, right?
Sure. Yeah. So why would the government be doing it unless there was a reason to be concerned?
Right.
Right. Exactly. You
know? Well, that's pretty good to put on your resume there. That.
Right. But I mean, the other, just the simple things too, I think that sometimes people take for granted, like smells, unusual smells or flashes of light in a room that has no lights in it, like, or a dark, you know, where did that source come from? Why did a flash of light happen in the middle of a staircase where there's no lights? Why did the water in a faucet that has a turn handle, as opposed to one of the ones that you lift up, that, you know, pressure could cause one of those lift ones to lift up. Mm-hmm. But how do you turn the water on where you have to turn the handle?
Right.
That happened, you know, 2 or 3 different times to us when we were at Stan's house.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like, and he would be like, oh, that's just, that happens all the time. And we're like, what? You know, type of thing. You know, the little things, the noise. We didn't see any of the, I take that back. There was one time there where I thought there was one. And I was also in a room where a rocking chair started rocking when we thought there was something in the room.
That's kind of creepy. Isn't that creepy?
Yeah. Yeah, it is creepy. It definitely is. It makes your hair stand up, but at the same time, it also makes you feel alive. It makes you feel like you're in the presence of something that forces you to think, forces right. you to go beyond what you believe to be true. And that makes some people uncomfortable. And for what we're doing, we that makes us feel, you know, alive. That makes us feel like we're doing something right, because we're pushing the envelope a little bit. We're pushing our boundaries of comfort, and we're learning as a result of what we go through. And I think that's a big part of it for people. It's just like, step outside your comfort zone. You know, maybe you don't want to be abducted and you know, have hybridization experiments performed on you, but, you know, you can do the research. You can talk to people who've been through those experiences. You can talk to experts who've done, you know, hours and hours of research that can help you better understand why some of the things that are being portrayed in the media are being portrayed in the way that they are, because there's plenty of evidence to support those statements and what I would say are now facts. That when you have people who are sharing similar stories from all four corners of the earth, and you have people who have never in African villages who don't have access to internet or don't have access to communications, and they're sharing stories that corroborate with people who have had experiences, you know, in other parts of the world, something is happening there. How is it possible that this evidence is that the storytelling is the same?
Well, yeah. Whitley Strieber says after he wrote Communion, him and his wife got 200,000 letters from people around the world talking about similar experiences.
Sure.
So something's happening that the mainstream media doesn't want to acknowledge, because if they did, that would change. That would be the disclosure, really, more than the fact that they're our ships. It's like there's something happening to people here. And the other thing I want to say about the paranormal is what Grant Cameron says about Skinwalker Ranch, if you know that place. People are paranormal prone. Some people are, and they just create that phenomena, and it kind of rubs off on other people who are around them. Uri Geller said he teleported after, you know, he had some early UFO experiences and would then be able to bend forks and all this. So there is a kind of field of, the only thing we can call is paranormal, but that's a very primitive word to describe phenomena like you've just described. Like you've actually opened a doorway to...
Right. And Alan, you'll find this interesting because this is where the connection is. And because I was kind of blown away by this because I had heard about in the world of hauntings and ghosts, people always describe that when something happens, you're sitting in your living room and all of a sudden you look on the staircase and you see an apparition coming down the staircase. Well, what people describe is that right before that happens, something in the atmosphere changes.
Yes.
There's something that changes in the atmosphere. And in the paranormal, parapsychologists and paranormal researchers, they call it the Oz factor. So you can look it up. It's called the Oz factor. And the reason they call it the Oz factor, obviously, is like, you know, 1 minute you're in Kansas in black and white, and the next you're in the, you know, you're in Oz, and it's all colorful, and there are munchkins and everything else. So it's actually a pretty, pretty accurate phrase. But so, but here's what's interesting. When we started, and we had interviewed a lot of people when we were doing research into hauntings and ghosts and going to places and doing investigations. And we'd always heard about that. And people would say, yeah, it was weird though. Something was different in the atmosphere. Something changed. And then when we started to interview abductees, experiencers in, when it came to UFOs and ET experiences, they would start saying the same thing. This, look, I was in my room one night. I was in my room, and before I was taken, something changed in the atmosphere. I could feel it. And I could, or I can, you know, there was an ionization, like, you know, lightning was about to strike, or, you know, they would describe something that changed. And it happened to me personally for the one time that I can really remember. I was on the Gettysburg battlefield, and we were up there with a bunch of people, and we were doing an investigation, and I had gone to get some equipment early in the morning on the battlefield, and it was like a foggy morning, and you can imagine the setting was perfect, but I went down into this field. It's called the Triangular Field, and it's a pretty active area. On the whole Gettysburg battlefield is amazing. There's so much energy there. It's unbelievable. It's so palpable, and John can attest to that as well. And so, but basically, long story short, I went down. I picked up the camera. I was walking back to the car when all of a sudden something changed, and I all of a sudden started hearing men's voices, men yelling. And yipping and yawing and screaming. And the objective part of me was, oh, maybe it's a cow. Maybe it's a dog. Maybe, like, what in the world could this be? There was no one on the battlefield. It was 6 o'clock in the morning. And it kept getting closer. And I heard these men, and they're yelling and they're making these noises. And it felt different. I was gone for that 30 seconds. I felt like I was in another place. And then boom, the sound stopped, and I came out of it. And I went to the car, and I told the person I was with, I said, you're not going to believe what just happened to me. And I knew enough about the Civil War and history because I had studied it, and I'm a student of that, and I love it. But we did some research, and really what I came to the conclusion was that I was actually hearing rebel yells, the rebel yells, the Confederates who were coming up this hill were yelling and yipping and yawing. And this is what they sounded like. And I did some research, and I found a clip at the 50th anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg. They had some Confederate soldiers, old men at this point in their 80s and 90s, do the rebel yell. And I'll never forget that moment as long as I live, because I was like, oh my God, that's what I heard.
Wow, that gives me chills. Actually,
I could attest to the Oz factor, because something changed in the atmosphere.
Well, I think something it's not changed. Just the atmosphere. I think it's the consciousness of us, of you, of abductees change when these doorways open. You step through, all I could say, is a time dimensional portal into that other realm. And your consciousness shifted. That's why those experiences are real. I mean, they are real. That happened. I mean, you can't argue with experience. And I think there's something about being in the field of an ET being because their consciousness is so different than ours, that also creates that shift in consciousness. And I think that's a big part of what happens and why people don't remember, because you have to be very, very lucid.
One of the things, too, is that once you get tapped on the shoulder, you're tuned into it a little bit more.
Right.
You're open to that idea of, and you don't have to have an experience. Like you asked earlier, well, maybe you don't know you've been abducted. And maybe we don't know. Maybe we've all been abducted. We just haven't had the connection to it in some way, shape, or form to have a conscious awareness of it. But when you start to ask the questions and do the research and open the doors and have conversations with people who have had these experiences, you're more susceptible to having experiences of your own.
Right.
And that really helps, I think, again, the conversation, the awareness, the evolution, the, you know, where we go next from here. And, you know, a lot of people would be like, yeah, you're not going to change anything. It's a world of, you know, 7 billion people going on 9. And, you know, it'll be, you're not going to even get a fraction of the world to start to think that way.
No, you are, because the next step is where do we go from here? Let's say your film does have an impact. How do we start to integrate these ET realities? Or not start, we're already starting, but what do you feel as these ET presences become part of the human reality? How will this change us? What's the bigger picture here, I guess I'm asking?
Well, I think we're going to explore this. We're in post-production on our next film, which takes a deeper dive into three different paradigms, which is the religious paradigm, the ascension paradigm, and the colonization paradigm. Three very, very different belief systems, but all of them believe in the existence of extraterrestrial life, that the technology, the ability to abduct, the hybridization, they all believe in all of that, but they have very, very different outcomes.
Right.
So it kind of brings you to the point of, okay, so when we get to the point where people are accepting, then they have to make the decision of what paradigm they believe.
Well,
and those create different realities in and among themselves that people will then mat on, I believe in the biblical narrative, or I believe in ascension, and the two don't coexist very well together, even though they believe in everything leading up to it, which is the existence and presence of ETs and hybridization, abductions, and hybrids walking among us.
But you're still asking people to fit into a slot, and maybe there are even more than three alternatives. I mean, it's not about choosing. I think there's a free form paradigm shift that has yet to really take place that will integrate maybe all three of those realities somehow. That doesn't seem likely to be integrated, but I know the film sounds really interesting, but I think more of what consciousness is unfolding to include something we have yet to conceive of.
I agree 100%.
This is a good step that you're taking. What's the name of that up next picture that's coming out?
To be determined.
I like
that. We're still, you know, still working on.
That's a good
title.
We're
still working on the name.
That's a great title, to be determined.
It actually is. I think you mentioned it.
It is. That's perfect, right?
Yeah, it is.
But
no, and I think, you know, one of the things that we love being on shows with people who ask these big questions, these big picture questions, because it does force people to think. And we in some ways feel like we're leading people to a discussion, and it's gonna take more awareness for them to feel comfortable kind of, you know, stepping into the water with other people who are already there. And that's really what we're trying to do. And, you know, not to say that these are primers, to a certain extent, they're very, very radical, you know, for people who don't believe. And the experiences are true based on the people who share them.
Of
you know,
course.
That's one of the things that I would say to anybody who is a doubter. Sit down with somebody who has had an experience before and spend a couple hours talking to them. There's a big difference between watching a film for an hour and a half, or watching a television show for 30 minutes, or reading something on the internet, or watching a YouTube clip for 5 minutes. It's not going to give you the essence of that person's experience.
Right.
Spend time with individuals who have had profound experiences so that you understand that they're not coming from a point of crazy. They're coming from a point of this was real to me. I don't know how else to explain it to you, but it was real to me. I believe that what I experienced truly happened to me. And when you spend the time with somebody like a Stan Romanek, we spent weeks with him before we even agreed to do the story because we wanted to make sure that we weren't missing anything.
Right.
So there's a lot of people that will throw, you know, him under the bus, and rightfully so after some of the legal issues, whether he's guilty or not. The legal is a huge stain, you know, on his reputation. But, you know, we focused on what happened before all that. And when you look at the evidence, even if a quarter of the things that happened to him are true, that's profound. It's still profound.
What's the name of
that
movie?
And to sit there and spend time with an individual like that, you really understand the trauma that they've been through and the confusion and the isolation.
I think Stan Romanek, his story is worth telling. What's the name of that film? Worth seeing.
It's Extraordinary. Extraordinary, the Stan Romanek film. That's available on Amazon Prime.
And
if
this,
wants.
This last film, Extraordinary, The Seeding, is what's coming out. Where will people be able to see this new film?
It will be launching worldwide on September 3rd at 3 a.m. Eastern Time. It will be on digital platforms like iTunes, Apple TV, Google Play, Vudu. Not sure about YouTube. It may be on YouTube as a pay-per-view. Also PlayStation, Xbox, any digital platform it will be available on. We're doing radio shows. We've been doing social media. The film has been accepted into official selection in 14 different film festivals. It's won 2 Best Documentary Film Festival awards, couple of other awards that are, you know, kind of like gold award, silver award. We were a monthly winner for one film festival. So we've had a lot of exposure through that. We've had a lot of social media.
Again, people can find it. What's the best website to look up research about this?
ExtraordinaryTheSeeding.com.
Okay, great. Thanks. Talking to John Supple and Jack Roth, the producer and director of this new movie, Extraordinary, The Seeding. You're finishing this next picture, but do you have more pictures, films in mind as part of?
We're using the Extraordinary name kind of like as a brand so that it you know, people are aware that we're going to be exploring some alternative points of view, and it's not all going to necessarily be within the world of ufology. There are other things that we want to explore, paranormal and explained mysteries, some other pretty amazing things. We've had a lot of things brought to our attention over the last several years, and all of them are fascinating stories, but we can't make them all. But we do have a pipeline of half a dozen films that are in development.
Great. Where are you guys based out of?
We're more of a virtual company, I would say, right, Jack?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're pretty much all over the place. Well, John, you're in Peru?
I'm in Peru right now,
yes. Peru, wow.
Our other partner's in New York. I'm in Florida.
Great.
And yeah, we are kind of virtual. I mean, we travel to where we need to go and do what we need to do.
Well, good luck with this film. I'll promote it. I'll put it out there. I think you are already making a change by just making the film and putting it out there in a way that's accessible to a bigger audience. So.
And you did see the film, correct?
I did. That's why I was a little late on the call. I was just finishing it up.
And what was what would be your one line that you would share with people based on what you saw?
Well, before I give you my one line, I've been exposed to lots of this through my own experiences and my own research. But my one line would be that what you sort of said before, the emotional impact of these experiences on people's lives are real. And they do change the person fundamentally.
Wow. I like it.
Okay.
We'll use that.
You can use it. Quote me. New realities. And I mean, I think there's so much more levels to go to, but people have to start here in order to drop into what's really going on. I mean, my understanding is that we are living on the surface of reality, and these ETs and even the paranormal phenomena are in the depths of below the surface. And as we go deeper into who we are as human beings, because, you know, it's really about being more human in a sense, more fully human, that we start to the next paradigm is not necessarily ascension or ETs. It's about fully embracing our total capacity for levels and levels of reality that we've ignored, you know, and I think we'll create a new society because we will tap into more human potential to feel each other, to create as artists, to have telepathic experiences. All that's happening, but it'll be a paradigm for the future of humanity.
Sign me up.
Okay, you're already there. Okay, thanks, guys. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much for having us, okay. Alan.